The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Monday, the 7th of June, 2021. On the podcast today, Bill Brodie-Good, CEO and Technical Director of Alien Metals, discusses the final results from the maiden drilling program on his Hancock Iron Ore project, which is part of the Hammersley Iron Ore project, of course. Plus, Alan Green, CEO of Brand Communications, talks about Venture Life Group, Hemogenics Pharmaceuticals, and Gfinity. Plus, as always, at the end of the podcast, I have two lists for you, the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most read RNSs. You can check out both these lists at voxmarkets.co.uk. We'll all see lots of other content. In fact, check out there on the front page, Traders Cafe with Zach Meir, Bulletin Board Heroes, 7th of June, looks at some small cap stocks that are hot today. There's an article on 88 Energy, there's one on Avacta, there's one on Alba Minerals from Francesca there. Plus, let's have a look at COVID-19 index, always worth looking at. Biggest rise today, in fact, Alan Green talked about them today, Hemogenics Pharmaceuticals, and biggest faller, Tech Capital. In fact, Hemogenics is up close to 8.5%, just over 2 pence. And Tech Capital is down 3.3% to 14.75. Check that out at voxmarkets.co.uk.
Vox Markets is an online community of investors that runs a free mobile and desktop platform that allows you to track news and updates about any UK-listed company, offering RNS push notifications, detailed charts, pricing data, and much more. Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Bill Brodie-Good, CEO and Technical Director of Alien Metals, UFO, is a ticker there. Bill, thanks for joining me.
Justin, great to catch up again.
Yeah, and you've just announced final drill results from the Hammersley project, the iron ore, of course, project, and it's looking good, including some results there. 103 metres at 61.8%. And this, well, we'll look into that in a bit. Before we do, Bill, as always, it's not just about this, of course, you've got other things going on, so for people not familiar, just give us a brief overview of what Alien Metals is all about, please.
Thanks, Justin. Yeah, I mean, look, Alien Metals, we're a minerals exploration development company. We currently have five main assets. That's the two silver projects in Mexico, which we're pushing hard to get our finalize our drill permitting. A copper gold project currently under earn-in agreement with Capstone Mining, who are funding large exploration program there. Mm-hmm. And then in Australia, we have, as you just mentioned, the Hammersley Iron Ore project, which consists of two tenements within the the world famous Pilbara iron ore belt, and the Elizabeth Hill silver, sort of copper, nickel, platinum group element project, also in the Pilbara. So they're our main assets, our main projects at the moment.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so let's dig into this, the final set of results here at the Hancock project. So take us through the results, if you could. Oh, there's a phone a friend calling in to help you out, but I'm sure you can do it on your own.
Well, that was a phone a friend, but actually, I'd like to think I'm pretty much up to speed on this. So we just, happy to announce today the final. So we have all the results from the first round of drilling, the maiden drilling on the Hancock tenement, which is the eastern tenement just outside of Newman. Awesome results, really. I mean, from a maiden drilling program, 103 meters at nearly 62% iron from surface and finishing in ore is quite an exceptional hole in a maiden drilling program, in any drilling program. And alongside that hole, 73 meters are just shy of 60% iron, also from pretty much from surface and ending in ore. These are all associated with the Sirius extension prospect, which is up in the northeastern corner of the tenement. We were following up some historical drilling. We'd mapped out where we felt this this potential deposit was going, and I think we've hit the sweet spot. So we're very encouraged by that, which is excellent. And as importantly, I think we, while we were prospecting and testing the Calgan prospect, which was sort of northwestern area of the tenement, also a historic sort of target, inverted commas, we defined these what we call now the Western Ridges, mm-hmm. which are a whole series of, well, they form ridges. They're basically banded iron beds outcropping at surface in a sort of layered cake type with a layer of banded iron, then a layer of dolerite, non-iron bearing, then another layer of iron bearing materials. And, we identified got some excellent, again, DSO, direct shipping ore hits, such as in hole six, 30 meters at 62% at pretty much at surface again. Hole 16, 18 meters at 55% again from surface. So we've had some excellent understanding and development of this, just a small area of the whole tenement. And I think it highlights to us and hopefully to everybody that this is a great acquisition for the company, and with some very sensible and cost-effective work, we're adding significant knowledge and value. And as been mentioned, we managed to get a rig at short notice, and we sent a rig out, and we're just finishing a second phase, a follow-up phase of drilling to fill in a couple of these gaps, which I'm hoping will be able to produce our initial inferred resource. Especially
Sirius,
which is awesome.
Yeah, absolutely. And I say the second phase drilling is progressing there. So, and how long do you think you get some data back from this?
Well, the second phase, so that's been going just under 2 weeks now. Mm. The team managed to send out the first batch of samples, majority from Sirius. That's where we sort of started our work. They went out about 10 days, a week ago. So they get transported down to Perth to the laboratory. They are in Western Australia, as we know. Everyone's flat tack and super busy. But we're hoping to start getting some results back, laboratory results, probably in another 3-4 weeks' time. I mean, it's just that's the turnaround at the moment. Geologically and what the guys have seen on the ground, highly encouraging, further highly encouraging. We, as I said, we've sort of filled in the gaps on the Sirius extension, prospect, deposit, whatever you want to call it now. So we feel that we've covered the ground sufficiently that we'll be able to, as we get the results back and with Howard Baker, our resource, iron ore resource guy, driving that boat, start hopefully put together a resource for in the next 4 to 6 weeks, I suppose, 6 to 8 weeks, worst case if there's a log jam in the lab.
Yeah, okay. But as it is, you're quite happy with these results, I assume?
Yeah. No, I think they're great. And again, we shouldn't forget that, this is one tenement of the two we have. The second one, the Brockman, we haven't had a chance to drill yet. We're finalising the necessary paperwork. And on Hancock itself, as in the announcement, now we're understanding better the mineralisation, the high grade, especially its relationship in the stratigraphy. So it sits sort of at the top, at the surface in these beds. And we've got kilometres to explore that have never been looked at. We've now got access into the sort of central part of the tenement. And one of the coming programs will be, again, a geologist in the field going along these ridges, for several, as I said, several kilometres, Ridge C, continuation Ridge E. There's other ones coming through now that we've never even looked at. So adding all the time, adding potential, for for making these really, really exciting and, you know, very much a potential standalone projects.
Yeah, absolutely. Give us a timeline, Bill. I mean, you know, say next three, six months, 12 months, what's happening?
Timelines are dangerous things to give because then it gives people a, you know, then they're sort of watching the clock tick down. Look, timelines is, it's going to be as long as, as long as we can sensibly and you know, with the right funding, develop, do the next stage. So, you know, start looking at some studies. Maybe we need to do some metallurgical test work on you know, larger samples to just check their metallurgical properties. You know, like some of the peer companies out there, Fenix, Strike Resources, start looking at putting some numbers together for how one would go about extracting, transporting, maybe, you know, looking at potential buyers for the product. We know there's plenty out there. Iron ore is still incredibly high value, high in demand, and we feel that's going to be maintained for, you know, a solid amount of time to come to push this forward. So look, I'm not going to say it's going to be 6 months, a year, 2 years, but we're doing, I'd like to think we're doing it, appropriately, cost effectively, each step, each correct step to at each phase advance the project.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, then, Bill, as always, if you could give us the three reasons why someone who's not yet following the story should hit that follow button on your page and add Alien Metals to their watch list, please.
Well, I think just what we were talking about now, you know, we've got a fantastic project developing right here for, you know, on the iron ore. And as I said, you know, we're still at infancy in terms of potential of these, both these projects. The silver side of the business with Elizabeth Hill, we're very soon about to start some trenching work, some mapping work. We're desperately trying to get ourselves a drill rig to do some initial drill testing on the historic ore body and with other ideas we have about that whole the whole area. So, and also with Mexico, you know, we have a couple of great projects in Mexico where we're still working up the permitting issues. And again, thirdly, I think just the people and the fact that we're spending investors' money in the right place, which is on the ground, as cost effectively and efficiently as possible.
Yeah, marvellous stuff. Bill, good to chat to you as always, and hopefully we'll be catching up in the not too distant future. Thanks very much.
Justin, good to catch up, and thanks for your time.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Alan Green, CEO of Brand Communications. You're Al.
I'm good, Just. Although I wish the sun would come out. It's just, it's not cloudy. It's just misty down here. It's, we've, from the wonderful sunshine we've had sort of in recent days, it's cold and dank now, but I'm hoping it's going to blow away by midday.
Yeah, do you know what? When I was on the coast, we hired a beach hut on the coast there, even the sun out sometimes on the coast, the wind picks up, you know, and it's funny, one day we had a dreadful, it started raining one day, and literally we had this beach hut, and they're quite nice. They're unbelievable prices, those beach huts, aren't they? I can't believe it. The lady who owns it says she bought it, right, in 1990 for $2,500. They're now selling for $85,000.
Wow, goodness me.
I know, it's just a little hut, that's all they are. Running water, there's everything's in there, sort of gas, but it's nice to have it. But at one time, we're all huddled in the hut, me and the two kids and the wife there, just huddled in the hut waiting for the rain to go, and there are people on the beach, and some people were actually swimming, but it was clearing. And I thought, no, this is Britain trying to make the best of it, you know, on the coast there. It was a dreary, horrible day, but we couldn't help laugh at ourselves, thinking, is this our holiday, is it?
But that's what we do, isn't it? That's what the British are so famous for. You know, we just put out with it and grit our teeth and get on with it and say we will have a good time. We're determined to have a good time, even though it's cold, horrible, and you know we'd all rather be on a beach in Spain or wherever. You know, we will get on with it. And
that's the trouble at the moment. There's no option, is there? You can't go near it until we were there. Normally, we would be abroad. I mean, literally. And like I said, when you go on holidays, you go for the weather. But when you don't have the weather, it's not like you can do. We just huddle in the speed shut, all four of us, just about fitting into it with all seats. And I think, oh, look at this. This is nuts. But, yeah, I suppose you get... But to be fair, though, we booked it, you know, like before May. And during May, it was a washout. And we thought, oh, my God, we're going to spend a week on the coast in the rain pretty much. But last week was quite nice, wasn't it, apart from one day we had, anyway.
Oh, it was, yeah. No, we had some great days last week, and yeah, certainly the I think it was the Friday and the Saturday. Well, it was Saturday. We had a great day. In fact, I was I did the barbecue late in the afternoon. It was just wonderful, just sitting outside, really warm, a couple of beers and a barbecue, nothing better.
Yeah. It's funny, so people say, if you just had the weather, Britain would be brilliant. But trouble is, the weather's a key factor, and we don't often have it. And when you don't, it's literally it's miserable. It's bratty. Anyway.
Yeah. It's also a key discussion point when you meet people, isn't it? Yeah. Isn't it? You know, anyone in the UK. Oh, what about the weather? Oh, what? No, I know. Yeah, it's always a good way to start a conversation.
Yeah, yeah. I remember once. Who was it? I don't know who it was. A friend of a friend or something. They moved to sort of California, and they originally moved in. They were buying a house, but they moved in with friends first of all, and. Every day the British got up with, oh, it's a nice day. And after like a week, the guy who was staying with me, why do you keep mentioning the weather every day? I said, well, it's a nice day, isn't it? This is California, man. It's always a nice day.
And it's he couldn't be
in the end, just, you know, after like a month of it, you realize, hey, but there's no point saying it's a nice day because California is nice. I wouldn't mind, you know, as I get older, to move into somewhere with nice weather every day, I think, you know. Because we don't really have the seasons over here, so wash out this hot. And, anyway, but there we are. But there's other things that's good about Britain, isn't there? I mean, you know, so many things that's good about it. It's just the weather. That's it. The weather.
Well, I think some of the scenery in this country is the best anyway. I mean, we're very fortunate where we are. We live at the foot of Seaford Head. If you go up on Seaford Head, the view across to the Seven Sisters and Beachy Head with the Coast Guard cottages, it's one of those iconic picture postcards. It's just beautiful. Really is. So, but yeah, when the sun's shining, of course.
Exactly. Yeah. Marvellous. Yeah. Okay, let's talk about investing, not in beach huts. But I mean, I can't see it. You rent those out for like, some of them are renting for 150 quid a day. But but it's hard to get your money back. The one we rent out was about 50 quid a day. But it took you over 10 years to get your money back. That's not the investment you want, is it really? But
if you can see, you know, if you buy for 2.5 grand, sell on for 85 grand, you know, that's a good return investment, isn't it?
Like anything. It's like, do you know what? You've got to be in early, you know? Get in early. Yeah. Obviously, 2.5 grand back in the 90s wasn't 2.5 grand. I mean, wages were a lot lower then, so it was a lot more than it is 2.5 grand now. But yeah, get in early and you're fine. Okay, let's talk about stocks. What are we looking at, Al?
Okay, firstly, Venture Life Group, VLG. We've spoken about VLG previously. The shares, the company's currently got a market cap of 113 million. Venture Life Group is a self-care company, and it sells a range of personal care, skin care, pain relief products across the UK and Netherlands, and it also sells via agents across 40 other countries. Has a manufacturing base near Milan in Italy, and of course with the pandemic last year there were concerns that the manufacturing base wouldn't be able to continue, which of course wasn't the case at all. The company ramped up manufacturing during the period and had a very strong year. So the shares have traded as high as 118 pence on the year, as low as 64p, currently at 92p, which is coincidentally just above the level at which the company raised 36 million in December last year. Now, with the range of products it's got, it owns brands such as Ultradex, Disin Plus hand sanitizer, and dental toothpaste and mouthwash. The company last year undertook got involved with an in vitro trial at Cardiff University to see whether CPC mouthwash eradicates SARS-CoV-2. It was proven it was the case. Using that mouthwash completely eradicated the virus within 30 seconds. And of course, that saw a bit of a boost in the share price. The papers were published at the start of 2021. And obviously, that's it's certainly given a boost in sales to dental in the meantime. Back to the placing last year. $36 million was raised, and the company had three potential acquisitions on the launchpad at that point. And it updated today. The company announced today it had made a key acquisition, which is the one of the first on the list. Project Vulcan, which is another acquisition that's involved in oncology support products, is still on the launch pad. But today the company announced the application of or the acquisition of BBI Healthcare, which is it's a market leader in women's health and diabetes and the energy sector, and it owns and manufactures Glucigel and Lift products in the health sector, and also Balance Active as well, which of course is a very well known brand. So it's paid a lot of money for the acquisition, but Jerry Randall, the CEO, said that they're conscious that the headline purchase multiples against the EBITDA numbers. I mean, you know, the company, EBITDA last year was pretty healthy at 2.6 million, but 36 million may seem a bit racy to some, but the growth in sales, the exponential growth from the manufacturing base, and also the economies of scale Venture Life can bring to this through using the existing manufacturing facilities to manufacture other products and distribute other products, the company can see real growth opportunities. So it's a good acquisition, and certainly the market seems to have approved of the acquisition today. Shares up 3.3%. And this is the company delivering on this plan to control a leading range of products within the self-care sector, both in terms of manufacturing and distribution. So a big step taken forward by Venture Life today. As I say, shares have been as high as 118 pence on the year, and it's not inconceivable to expect that at some point further down the road, once all the acquisitions have been bedded in, the company may look to pay some sort of dividend out to shareholders. But that's pure speculation on my part, and there's been no statement by the company to that effect. But it's a highly cash generative vehicle. In the full year to December, the company grew revenues by 49% to 30 million. Gross profits were up 61% to 13 million, and adjusted EBITDA rose 105% to 6 million. Earnings per share up 154%. So it's a big cash generator, you know, real great diverse spread of products. It's got the potential to become a real cash cow going forward. And, you know, at current levels, which is basically where the 36 million was raised last year, I think it offers a great level to buy in at.
Do you hold any stock?
We've worked with the company, and we have some interest. Yes.
This is a good politician answer, huh?
Yes. Yes.
Have you noticed that politicians never say yes or no? It's so annoying. I mean, it's literally they ask for a question, and they won't start off with a yes or no. I mean, normal people, I don't know, and they've got a special politician school where they say, whatever you do, never say yes or no.
Never say yes or no.
Just we think, don't get what you think, just say yes or no. Well, if you look at it back, if you go back to it, no, did you say yes or no, please?
Well, you can't first answer that question without addressing this issue. That's right.
I know. Yeah. God, what can you just pay for yes or no, please? Cool. It's consolidated for a while, isn't it? It's gone along on you know, to the right. Big rise is pretty much, you know, what was that, until June last year, a year ago. It's almost gone in a range for close to a year now.
Well, the November spike was on the back of the COVID trial with Cardiff University that really drove the share price higher. And I interviewed Sharon Collins, the group commercial officer at that time, and we discussed it. And it was a real boost for the group. But of course, the company's core areas are just acquiring, and it's got a great distribution network and manufacturing facilities, obviously in Milan. And now in Sweden as a result of this acquisition. So I think it's got a really diverse offering, multiple different products, they've successfully embedding previous acquisitions. They acquired a company called PharmaSource in 2019 that bedded in very well last year and really drove revenues to the bottom line, and they fully expect this one will do the same.
Cool. Okay. So marvelous stuff. VLG. What's up next, Al?
Okay, the second one is Hemogenics Pharmaceuticals.
I've seen this. It's taken a bit of a hammering of late, hasn't it? Now, I think, I'm not up for the story. I mean, a while back, when they first listed, they came on the podcast, and it seemed very good. And then they had a massive rise in the share price in April of last year. And then again, but they got a huge amount of convertible loan notes, and then all of a sudden, have they cancelled those or something? What's going on there?
Yeah, the loan notes were
paid off.
The loan notes were paid off last year, and of course I think there was a lot of uncertainty in regard to the structure around those loan notes, but I think the company recognised that and paid them off. But I mean, underneath that, it's made very, very strong progress indeed. So the company is engaged.
The share price is mad because basically where they were previous to that, they literally went up by 91% on the 27th of April. Then the next day, they went up by 134%, which was on top of that 90%. And that took them up to like 10 pence. Mm. And they came back a bit for the next couple of months. They rallied again in August. They were up to sort of 14 pence.
14.5
and now
pence,
they're back down at that pre-level of 2 pence before the rise.
Yeah, yeah. And fundraisings have been conducted, I think, at about 5.5, 6p last year. So I mean, for a whole load of reasons, I think the company, it's currently got a market cap of 19.5 million, which when you consider where the company are and the steps that they've taken, I think is astonishingly low. And I think probably, we've looked at other pharma companies at this level, companies like Destiny Pharma, they were trading at about 25 million, I think, this time last year, and they're now well over 100 million market cap. And I think Hemogenics are going to do the same because what they have developed and are working on is incredible. So they're using stem cell therapy effectively to create antibodies that go in and kill off the disease cells in the body. This is obviously for leukemia and other cancerous diseases. And these antibodies to replace those cells using essentially a stem cell therapy to develop the healthy cells. And the company has gone through a series of phases to develop the HUFEC, that's called the HUFEC technology, CDX antibodies, and then the CAR T program, T cells, which it is developing in conjunction with the University of Pennsylvania. And in January this year, it announced that it had taken a further step with the University of Pennsylvania, or Penn for short, to set up a manufacturing facility and develop clinical trials for these HemoCAR program T cells. Go back to last year, the company announced a global agreement with Eli Lilly and Company to provide material for research and development potential for licensing agreements. And obviously, Eli Lilly are huge. So that was a very strong collaboration. And And a lot of the share price action that we saw last year was really based around these relationships. There was a further announcement that announced in April this year to basically enhance to license and move the products to clinical trial level. Today there's an announcement from Hemagenix, which I think should really start to trigger a recovery in the stock, in my opinion. The new US Patent and Trademark Office has approved the CDX patent for conditioning bone marrow and hemo stem cell transplantation transplantations. I think this is going to be the trigger that will set the company or trigger recovering the shares and see the group start to move back to the levels we saw last year. The chief executive is the founder, Vlad Sandler, and he really was the guy that came up with the idea and the concept in the first place. Vladislav Sandler, chief executive and co-founder. We have Dr. Sir Mark Feldman, who is the chairman of the company, came in last year. Peter Redmond, well known in small cap companies, is a non-exec on the board, and some very highly regarded scientific advisors helping the company to develop and further further its offering. But it's gone through quite an evolution, but I think the stage is now set for Hemagenix to really drive forward and start to deliver on the original concept, take it into clinical trials later on this year.
Right. I have no idea what you talked about there. Too technical for me, that.
It is, yeah. Well, I mean...
That's a company you have to do some deep research on, I think, you know.
It is, yeah.
So sell it to me in one sentence. What have they got? What's going to be big there?
Okay, so what they're doing is they're using stem cell technology to create healthy cells that go into the body and remove and fight and take out disease cells. And these are diseases such as leukemia.
And what stage, so where are they at? The clinical trials, yeah?
Yeah, well, they're moving towards... Moving towards clinical trials now, and that they have the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office has approved the CDX patent for developing bone marrow and hemostem cell transplantation into humans. So it's approved the patent. Now it's clinical trials and the stages and the various stages that the company will go through. So still very much early stage, but a company that's at this level. I think at 19 million where we are now offers fantastic value. There's a huge amount of science and technology gone into this already, and it offers great opportunity. I will declare I am a shareholder at this moment in the company too.
When did you buy?
I need to look at my account. I think it was about a week ago.
Okay. Well, there we go. Buy low, sell high. That's the way. If you didn't buy the spike out, that's the main thing.
That's right. Yeah. I did also own shares last year, and I picked them up because the shares fell to 5p and then popped back up again. So, yeah, I did make a profit on the shares last year. But I think the technology now, where they're at now, this is – you see these small pharmaceutical companies go through various evolutions where they market development and get to a certain point, and then it's on to FDA approval or clinical trial approval. You then move to clinical trials, and that's the late stage. Obviously, you've got to go through two or three phases of clinical trial, and then when you're at number three, generally speaking, you've got your marketing and distribution network set up, ready to go, and a partner to manufacture and take it out into the big bad world.
Yeah,
and
I've got to say, though, I mean, there's a lot of risk going through those clinical trials. You know?
Oh, there is. Absolutely, yeah.
I think it's about cancer is quite a high risk, but with going from preclinical to past phase three, there's only less than 5% of companies get through that.
Yeah. Those are big hoops to jump through. But you often find that the companies that maybe get their product to a certain point.
Was it 13%? I can't remember off the top of it. 13 or 5. There's a big difference in that. But no, but still, there's still odds against
it. I don't think it's as low as 5%. I think, you know,
when. There was a change where if cancers are involved, because obviously there's different clinical trials, of course, on different lots of different things, but cancer is highly risky, and that reduces the chances. But let's just say, do your research on it, because you may want to sit and hold, but you have to do lots of research on companies like that going through clinical trials, because they are high risk, but of course, you know, high reward as well.
High risk, high reward. Exactly, and that's the most important thing to bear in mind here. And you're investing in, you know, science and technology.
Sorry, 13.8%. 13.8%. So you're over 10%. If you look at that, that's overall probability of clinical success is about 10%. This study has 13% of all pathways make it through. The biggest difference is phase 2 to phase 3. So phase 2 and phase 3 is the one of the most risky. But so if you look at it on a round figure, you're looking at a 90% chance of failure.
Those are really odds stacked against. But I think, those are the gold stats. But often when a product gets or a treatment gets to the phase 1 or phase 2 point, you sometimes find that the product does have an application and may be better suited to use against some other disease or other opportunities open up. So it's not necessarily as cut and dried as that, but certainly statistically that is the case. But if a company's got to, say, phase 1 or phase 2 with a product, chances are it'll have some other products in its armory or have exposure to some of the science as a result of its successes along that road to date. So it won't necessarily be the death of the company at that point. I think the risk is where you do find a product with a pharma company with a single product, then it lives or dies by the success of that product. And I think we saw with, what was it, Immu Pharma a couple of years ago, there was an issue with one of the trials and the share price collapsed literally by about 70 or 80%. And it's recovered some way since that point. But that is the risk, of course, you face in this sector.
Mm-hmm. Marvelous stuff. Cool. Anything else, Al?
Gfinity.
Yep. We've Gfin well, yes.
I know this is a favourite of yours, and it's a good company. So shares currently trading at 4.5p, been as high as 6.2p on the year, and of course as low as 1.3p. And they've just—it's a good chart actually. It's just showing a series of higher lows, maybe drifted back from that. But of course, this is the esports provider and broadcaster of esports competition, has an offline center in Fulham, or esports arena in Fulham, which of course will start to come back online or will start to come back into use shortly, and has a raft of other affiliations and arrangements. Abu Dhabi Motorsports, of course, with the V10R League, a multi-year agreement with Formula One, the E-Cricket Challenge, the E-Premier League Challenge. I mean, the list goes on and on. And then, of course,
I think if you are, and this is increasingly happening right now. So I've been ahead of the curve on many sort of long-term mega trends, but I've jumped out pretty much too early, not realizing I'm early, just thinking it's not going to happen, and they've taken off. And so with esports, it's very much the same. On a daily basis, on a weekly basis, there are brands realizing they can only target the demographic they want via esports. And this is becoming bigger. Esports now, you know, we're anywhere near mainstream yet. And yet it will become mainstream. Mm. And the money thrown at it will be similar to that thrown at mainstream sports. And it'll get there. And if you are a brand that's want access to this area, you know, Gfinity can help you get access to this. So it's a world-class esports setup. They can set you up and, you know, provide competitions, ideas, all that kind of stuff, the platform, all that stuff. They've also got what I think is amazing. This time last year, they started up Digital Media, which has grown so much. And they're only looking at, from get-go, you imagine starting a business from nothing last year, and it generating $2 million in revenue in the first year and being very high margin, took about 70% gross margins here. That's where they are. And I think that's underestimating where they're going to be, because they've done $1 million in the first 6 months. And yet they've got more websites now and more deals. So I think they're going to do a lot more than $2 million, another million in the second half. So that's a fast-growing, highly profitable, big margin business. So I like that a lot. But one other thing. What's frustrating people is the warrants. When John Clark took over as CEO, legacy management, basically burned lots of cash, got to the stage where almost they couldn't find anyone to raise some funds. So John Clark came in. They had to issue warrants. So they raised $2.25 million, plus they released warrants for every share. And those warrants are dragging a bit. They expire in October. Today there's been some options announced. Legacy, of course, options are for employees, ex-employees. Legacy management, I think, have exercised the majority of those 15 million warrants. But like I said, they may sell, they may not. But again, another drag on the share price. But people get caught up in warrants and options and all this. Look at the business always. If you're an investor, you're investing in the business. Yeah. You know, if the business is improving, sooner or later the share price will. Like I said, it's a voting machine in the short term. It's a weighing machine in the long term. And I think that the business will prove out in the end. It'll take a while. It's frustrating. The share price has gone up. It's come back because you realize warrants have been sold into, or the price has been, or liquidity has been sold into, and it drags the share price back a bit, which it is frustrating. But sooner or later it will pop and it'll start moving. You know.
Yeah, absolutely, and that's the thing. It's warrants and those are entwined with financing arrangements in the short term. But as you say, once the business revenues start to take off and develop, which of course they are, then that becomes academic. You know, it doesn't matter then, because the business is on its way and it's generating revenues to fund its own growth. But certainly on the GDM, Chief Digital Media, Abra announced it was expanding its partnership with Venatus to further boost the GDM publishing platform, and said then it was on track for $2 million for the full year. So that, from a standing start, is pretty damn good. You know, that's quite something. And of course, in March we had a number of other additional agreements with Iconic which was a fan engagement platform. It's became their official esports partner and receives a monthly fee for that. The Map Genie partnership, where video game maps are embedded into articles on the Gfinity website, so a boost in traffic. And also, of course, we had the half-year numbers. Operating loss of 0.9 million from a loss previously of 3.1 million. But in that period, the half-year period, the company generated 3 million of revenues, had cash of 1.8 million versus 1.6 million previously. So that's a huge turnaround in its financial position, which probably it wasn't really reflected at all in the share price. And I think, as you say, just those warrants have probably been dragging it back. But also, we've had a series of appointments then since then,
have been stellar. I mean, let's be honest. Well,
is ex-Apple, Hewlett-Packard, and of course AMP. And I mean, he held a senior position within Apple. He's been appointed as Chief Revenue Transformation Officer. So, a guy that's overseen Apple product distribution development is now overseeing the development of Gfinity. I mean, that's huge. You can't overstate that.
He's the second Apple exec as well. Len Rinaldi is also there just before him. I think Len was friends with Tom there, and he brought him on board as well. So, but there's two now. Len Rinaldi was also, he was in charge of the Middle East, Africa, and a thing of Apple. So two major Apple execs. And then recently there's non-executive director, Hugo Drake. He was managing director of the Telegraph Group.
And formerly Time Warner. And, of course, he's also on the board of Future PLC. So you know, this is like a who's who of the best people in the industry.
Yeah, and do you know what? John came on a while back and he said, I asked him, what does he see as the new model for Gfinity? Where does he see? And he said, well, if you look at Future PLC, and on the podcast, I sort of looked it up quickly. I didn't really know much about it because I'm more small cap investor. But this is again a digital media business that's grown to. Let's look at it now. I think it's a couple of billion. It's 2 billion worth of market cap. Look at the share price. It's grown very well. 2.4 billion it is, but it's become a 10 bag in the last 5 years. So he said that's very much the model, where it's higher margin, where you own He said, you know, they are a service provider, of course, in esports, but owning your own stuff is where it's at. And like I said, the digital media bit, that's theirs. And that's yep. That's where they have big margins. And so he wants to expand that part. And like they are doing that. And so it's a very exciting high growth area there. And of course, getting a guy on from Telegraph, who's in media and is also on the board of Future, you can see where they're going with that, you know?
It's perfect. It really is. You know, some really strong strategic appointments there by the board. And then, of course, most recently, further boost to GDM. They've launched Only Mobile Gaming, OMG. That's a great moniker in itself. The mobile gaming website, which will further boost GDM revenues. So, just you could well be right that the second half revenues could well exceed $1 million, and you know, put it at over $2 million advertising revenues for a standing start on the year. But I mean, that progress I don't think has necessarily been reflected by the share price progress at all, but certainly if you picked the stock up last year at say 2.5-3p, you know, you'd be selling pretty now. But this is only the start of the story. We're still right at we're very much in the foothills of the Andes at the moment, in you know, metaphorically speaking. Mm-hmm.
Yeah no, not actually in the foothills of the Andes.
we're right at the bottom of K2 or Everest.
It's very interesting. So I said you know, most of that monetization of the websites wasn't reflected in the first half, so we'll see. And you know, they had the websites, they were building them, but now they've started to monetize them, advertising, their wraparounds, all that stuff is happening. So yeah, I think we'll see you know, more progress here in the second half, a lot more. I think John is one of these guys that you know, he doesn't oversell. He under-promises and over-delivers, and I like that, you know. And so yep. He doesn't, you know, a lot of these stuff, of course, they've been RNS, but he hasn't, John was a regular on the podcast, he still will be, but I think now he's toning it down a bit, and he wants the financials to talk themselves a little bit, because I think they will start to, and I think he's one of those people that let the sort of figures speak for themselves, you know.
Well, I think they are already. I mean, those half-year numbers, you know, we've seen revenue $3 million in the half year. That interim loss has fallen from $3.1 million to $900,000. So you know, if they carry on exponentially growing revenues at this rate, that'll turn around into an operating profit. And then what's the share price? As you say, the financials will then do the talking for the company.
Yeah, marvellous stuff. Of course, I hold shares in that. I've done many videos on Gfinity, and I held them back when they were just a penny and a half, I think. So I've done quite well, but I haven't sold any, because I believe it's an improving business, and I think it's a hot industry that's going to get hotter. And the board members they're bringing on, including with John, obviously John and the team, they're doing very well. So I just think it's improving nonstop. It's one of these things. It's a long-term hold, you know.
Agree. Absolutely with you on that. I think it's a really exciting time to get in. And there are also other companies coming to the market, but I think Gfinity, they've been there for a while. They're entrenched, and they've just got a very strong offering. You know, and I think, you know, non-execs of the caliber of Hugo Drayton and Tom Pricing, you know, they're not going to join a board unless they see huge potential and also a quality operation too. You know, they'll have taken a good look at the operation. Can I do something with this by joining? You know, can I materially improve things? And you know, and people of that caliber won't join a company if they don't think they can do that.
Marvellous stuff. Cheers, Al, and we'll speak you next weeky.
Cheers, Jess. Speak you next weeky.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at five. Nuformix up 3.5%, 2.05 pence. At four, Challenger Energy Group, down 1.8%, 2.75. At three, Starfline Group, up 7.3% to 60 pence, pretty much. At two, Net Scientific, good rise today, good news, hooking up with AstraZeneca, up 72% to 129. And at one, Powerhouse Energy Group, down 3.4% to 5.7 pence. Okay, top five most read RNSs are as follows. At five, DeepVerge, firm, conditional placing and subscription for 10 million. At four, Nuformix, notice of allowance, patent in the US. At three, Synergen, grant of options. At two, Avacta Group, MHRA confirms registration of lateral flow test. And at one, Omega Diagnostics, that's progress update.
That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos appreciado.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.